This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Case before the United States Supreme Court. Tyler versus Hennepin County. It turns on Geraldine Tyler, 94 years old, who fell behind in her property taxes. So far behind because of unusual fees advanced by the county that her property was eventually seized and sold. The taxes were paid off, no matter how high they were, but there was a leftover. The county kept the leftover. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. Richard learned about this case in Reason magazine, so we now turn to what we're experiencing is something that is not exceptional, is routine, but the logic of it is outrageous. Richard, when I first read this, a very good evening to you. When I first read this, I thought it was going to have a different outcome. I thought surely somebody is not going to persecute Geraldine Tyler. Is this something that happens in all states or is it particular to this jurisdiction? And what do we make of the court going to say this, the commonsensical, you shall not seize the bounty of a woman's sale? Good evening to you.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, most states have actually reversed the rule and turned this into a low-level administrative dispute in which, after all, the principal interest and cost are determined, an absolutely standard measure when you're dealing with mortgage foreclosures or a lien foreclosure in this case, you just simply write a check to the person who has the residual and return the money. The analogy that I gave in the piece that I wrote on the Hoover side was, suppose it is that you get into a struggle with the IRS, and what happens is they have this elaborate dispute with you. They see some of your property. What they do is they should basically sell it. That they can surely do, and then refund you the excess of what they meant. You don't want these things to be lawsuits. You don't want to have somebody say, look, we've taken your property and we've now sold it, and we're entitled to do that because what happens is you don't want these properties to sit in government hands unused and unoccupied. There is a process called the statutory right of redemption, which allows a property owner to recover his property by paying everything off within 3 years. If they don't do it, it's important to get that property back onto the market. So you lose your right to recover the property, but there's no reason to say why you have to have the equity in the property that is wiped out. What makes the thing even ironic is that if you start looking at the numbers involved in these things, when local governments get their jaws into somebody, what happens is all the standard benchmarks for what counts as a reasonable fee or what counts as a reasonable interest rate seem to go out the window. And so these bills quickly multiply and remultiply again, so that in the end, 60, 70, sometimes 90% of what you're paying is interest, fees, and penalties and so forth, rather than the original debt. So I actually think there are two reforms that have to be made in the case like this. One is you have to have some external measure which tells you how much of a tax and how much of a fee that you can impose. Remember, they've got the property, and the property is worth far more than the lien, so they can't treat this as though it's a highly risky loan when it turns out not to be. But they do. So we see both the padding on the one hand of the expenses, and then we see the keeping of the equity on the other. This, by the way, is not necessarily unique to this area. Every time you start getting property forfeitures of one form or another, there's a similar situation where local governments, in effect, manage to squeeze every last dime out of these arrangements, often to the prejudice of innocent parties whose property has been taken. A leading case on that, it's frightening, is a husband uses his wife's car to commit acts of prostitution. And then what happens is the government says, aha, this was an instrumentality in the crime. And it's not his car that they're seizing, it's her car that they're seizing. So this is something which one has to worry about across the board. Government overreach in the collection of past due debts is a serious issue.
You mentioned in your article that the Eighth Circuit sustained the county. In other words, they went along with the idea that that Mrs. Tyler gets back nothing. I'm puzzled, Richard. This doesn't stand up to common sense. Conventional wisdom would say if there's left over, it goes to her, as you've said, in a tax return. Is this longstanding, reaching back to the 18th century?
Well, the actual operative cases on this go back to the 1950s with the United States Supreme Court. And it seemed to me that they really rested on a fundamental confusion. What the judge in the Eighth Circuit said following these earlier cases is the state has now declared that your interest is wiped out. Since it's wiped out your interest by declaration, you don't have any property, and so therefore you cannot say that your property was taken. And the argument that is made to sort of bolster this up was you had lots of notice that this thing was going to happen, and if you didn't act on the notice, then you forfeit your property right. The correct thing to say is you have lots of opportunities to redeem the property. We can't keep that property in limbo forever, so you have to forfeit the property. But once it's sold, you don't have to forfeit the proceeds. And what happens is this notice of this notion of notice is a very slippery idea. Notice is it's absolutely essential in one sense for running a complicated legal system, and it's totally dangerous in another sense for doing the same thing. So a notice in its benign sense is as follows. You have a piece of property, and what happens is there's a danger that somebody else will pretend to sell what you own, or you will sell the property to somebody else and then claim that you still have it and sell it to a third person. And so the way in which we secure conveyances is we say that every deed and every mortgage has to be put on a public registry, observable by everybody else. And so that when you start to buy property, it is perfectly clear that you cannot rely on the innocent representations of somebody who says he owns the property. You have to look to the registry to see that it's true. And so what that registry does is it warns you off of entering into transactions with people who don't own the property. And so the system has always been a huge success, not because it generates litigation, but because it involves the stability of property interests. This bulletin board essentially lets people know whom they have to deal with and know who are imposters and who are frauds. So these are anti-fraud measures, and they are adopted everywhere out throughout the world. You cannot run a property system today without having some kind of a bulletin board or a recordation statute. There's an old joke amongst us libertarians, well, what are the kinds of laws that you really need to have? And I recall many years ago when Henry Manning did this to me. You know, Henry was a small government guy. He started to talk about force and fraud and antitrust laws. I said, Henry, you forgot one of these things. You forgot the recordation systems. They're invisible, but they're vital. And he confessed that that was something he would add to his list. Now, the notion of notice in other cases is really quite insidious. So suppose you want to walk out on the street, John. And what I do as a good thug, I say to you, John, I want to give you notice that if you walk on this particular street, I'm going to beat your brains out and I'm going to steal all your money. And so therefore, when you go on the street, the argument is you've assumed the risk that somebody's going to take your money and somebody's going to punish you. And so therefore, you cannot claim. Well, this is just the world's worst type of situation because now notice is just the threat to do something. And people should be entitled to disregard threats. The danger is, of course, that they will take word of this very seriously and stay off the street. And that's exactly the sense in which notice is used in this case. You had noticed that we were taking your property, and so therefore you can't complain when we actually take your property. But this is very different from a recordation system that's designed to secure the title and to make sure that the system works well. This is just a naked act of coercion. So what happens is you see in the 1950s, this is Earl Warren in the Supreme Court, what they do is they use this notion of notice to essentially wipe out the property interest. And that was the particular doctrine on which it turned out that the Eighth Circuit relied. Now, the Supreme Court has taken this case. I was not entirely happy with the briefs of the Pacific Legal Foundation, a terrific operation, because I don't think they put the point in the way in which I think it is most powerful to be made. But my guess is that the Supreme Court took this thing because you're going to see a recognition that this is kind of a usurpation of rights. And so then you ask, is this a liberal or is this a conservative court? Well, I don't think it's either. I mean, I think it's both. That is, you start looking at who's victimized by these kinds of things, and they're small, isolated owners who don't have sophisticated lawyers and so forth. And when you start looking at the government kind of property actions, and it's sort of sleazy one way or another, I can't conceive why this is only a conservative case or only a liberal case. My hope is that this would be one of the many cases in which left and right could come together and say, look, we believe in the integrity of the process. People should not get away without not paying their taxes, but they should not be abused in two ways. They should not be charged excessive fees when they're in default, and they should not be robbed of their equity after the proper fees, the fees when they're properly determined, have been in effect paid off.
The argument is scheduled for April 26, 2023. Whether taking and selling a home to satisfy a debt to the government and keeping the surplus value is a windfall violates the Fifth Amendment's Takings Clause, and whether the forfeiture of property worth far more than needed to satisfy a debt plus interest, penalties, and costs is a fine within the meaning of the Eighth Amendment. Richard, 9-0 in favor of
this? Well, I would hope so. The fine point is one that I didn't touch, but essentially you're not supposed to impose excessive fines for crimes, and this might well fit into that. But if you get the property analysis right, and then you don't have to go and rely on the somewhat more amorphous Eighth Amendment claim.
Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, writing at Divining Ideas about a case pending before the court. We're going to turn to another court overseas next, a conversation about Marbury versus Madison and the way judges are chosen and administer their offices in the state of Israel. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.